Welcome to the Rapid Discourse Podcast. I'm your host, Paul Essen, and I'm joined by my regular discoursers, Andrew Riley and Travis Hudson. And we're continuing our video game series of our favorite and most fun with friends and best music video games of the various generations. Andrew, why don't you tell us what generations of games we're talking about this episode?
Today we are going to be talking about video games from the sixth generation of video games. These are video games that came out on video game consoles such as the Dreamcast, the PlayStation 2, the original Xbox, the GameCube, the Game Boy Advance, or were on PC from the years of 1999 to 2005 release dates. We're also going to be continuing with our guessing game. Each of us is going to try and take a pick at the one of the games that is on the other's lists. So we each get two choices, one for each of our fellow hosts, and we try and say, this game is on your list, and if we were right, we get a pride buck. If we're wrong, we get nothing. It can be in any of the categories, but it cannot be in the honorable mentions, so you actually have to nail one of the categories. The current scores are that Travis leads with 4 pride bucks, and Paul and I are tied with 2 pride bucks, despite the fact that Travis gave us a freebie last generation. All right, Travis, tell us what we are going to be picking categories for.
All right. First, I'll just give a shout out to the beer I am drinking tonight, since it's from a different company than usual, is Jailbreak Brewing Company's Utter Chocolate. It's a milk chocolate stout, so it's a good dessert beer.
Is that utter chocolate a pun? Is that like a cow's udder on it?
Yes. U-D-D-E-R. Utter chocolate.
So. All right.
And it is certainly chocolate.
Are you saying that your game is a prison break game?
So it has nothing to do with my game tonight.
Not tonight. Okay.
There might be prisons in some of the games. I don't know. I'm sure there are. Anyway, we're already going off topic. The 5 categories we have that Paul almost stole my thunder for. We have most fun with friends. We have best story, best music, most memorable, which we're free to interpret as we want. We also have personal best. And at the end, we can offer up some other games that were worthy of discourse, but didn't quite make the cut for any of those 5 categories. So, Paul, you'll lead us off with your first guess.
All right. So, I had a really hard... This generation in particular, I had a really hard time guessing for you guys. And for Andrew in particular, I'm pretty sure you love Diablo. And so I was... it really hurt me in my soul when I picked Diablo last generation, and it was a big fat zero, a loser. And I'm sitting here looking at Diablo 2, and I really want to pick Diablo 2. But I'm worried because when I picked Castlevania 2 for Travis, I feel like I've gotten burned on these series where I got the right idea, but I picked the wrong game. And so I'm really torn. I'm gonna say right now, the runner-up was Kingdom Hearts because I'm pretty sure you like Kingdom Hearts. But I'm going to – and here's your tie-in right here. Travis has his utterly chocolate beer. Diablo 2 has a cow level. So I'm going to go with Diablo 2 for Andrew.
Sticking with the Diablo train.
After all that wind-up, I'm sticking with them. I'm going down with the Diablo ship here. Travis, I also had a hard time for you. I actually had 3 different ones to choose from, and I'm guessing that the other 2 that I'm not going to go with are going to be on your list, and the one that I go with is not. For the record, because everyone cares, the 2 that I did not go with were Guitar Hero and Devil May Cry, because I think those are games that you liked. And I'm a little worried that I may have the wrong game of the series. Like, it might be Guitar Hero 2 or Rock Band or something like that. Or it might be Devil May Cry 3.
Devil May Cares in this generation, I think, yeah.
And so I'm going to go with the one that I'm least confident in some ways, but whatever. It's Shadow of the Colossus, because I think that's supposed to be one of those all-time classics. And I think I remember you gushing over it. But again, I'm old and my memory is going. So there you go.
Okay, so it's my turn to take some stabs at what are on Paul and Travis's list, and I'm going to take Paul out of the way because I think that one's going to be easier. We talked about this game a little bit last generation because it is a classic of the 4X series. It's a game I have played and very much enjoy, so Paul is not wrong in liking it, but it is not the best 4X game because the best 4X game was my pick for the best game for last generation, but I think that Paul has picked on his list this generation Alpha Centauri. Travis was much harder for me this generation, either because I wasn't paying enough attention or the games just didn't stand out very well. So I had a number of different choices that all fit in reasonably well, and I had to say, which one of these was the one most likely to show up on his list. And then, even then, I'm not entirely sure that this is necessarily a game that you liked. Like, this may have been just something in the cultural osmosis from around then that could have been something you would have liked if you had played it, but maybe you never played it. I don't know. That's how bad I feel about this guess. But I'm sticking with it. I'm going to say American McGee's Alice.
Mm. That is right up Travis's alley, if you will.
Yeah.
Or right up his Alice? That work?
No, that's a little off.
Okay.
So, yeah. I can't blame you guys that this was a hard generation to pick for me, because this was the first generation where I owned every single one of the consoles.
Wow.
I had all the options available to me, and PC. And speaking of PC, I'm going with PC games for both of you, because as far as I know, I don't know if you guys owned any of these besides maybe a Game Boy Advance. I guess Andrew owned a PS2. But I'm going with, for Paul, I'm going with Sid Meier's Alpha Centauri.
Superior version.
That is fair. It is Sid Meier's Alpha Centauri.
And I think I said I was going to guess it last generation, this generation. So yes, I am copying Paul and picking Diablo 2 for Andrew, even though I'm a little less certain about it because I thought he mentioned something about Diablo 3 last time. But Diablo 2, I'm pretty sure, is usually the be-all, end-all, I thought. But I guess we'll find out. So we'll just jump into things with Paul. What is your most fun with friends game?
Well, so I just want to say very briefly, this is interesting. Both Andrew and I have the exact same game picked. You're the wild card here. Like, if anyone's going to be making up some points here, it's Travis. Okay.
Which means we're kind of hosed, Paul, because whichever way this goes, he's caning on us.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one of us could be right. Neither of us feels confident that we're right, but it could happen. All right, so fun with friends. This is probably the hardest one I had this generation. For the longest time, I had Heroes of Might Magic 3, and it will be one of my worthy discourses because I actually spent a ton of time playing that with friends, and it's a great game, a lot of fun. But ultimately, I kind of had to go with Unreal Tournament because that was a game played a ton with friends. It's kind of the that's actually unfair. Duke Nukem 3D was probably the first first-person shooter I really had a lot of fun playing with friends. But this one, all the circumstances were just put into place. You know, you had a high-speed internet connection, a lot of friends with some free time in college. It had all these great maps and great modes, Capture the Flag. It was like the first time I played Capture the Flag in an FPS. It had amazing weapons, a cool sci-fi theme. Who can forget the Multra Kill when you go from a multi-kill to an Ultra Kill within like a split second of each other? I just remember wasting away hours and hours and hours of that game. Not wasting away the game. Wasting away time to that game.
Wasting away the enemies.
Yeah.
Get wasted.
Wasting away my friends. And it's probably, to this day, it might be the first-person shooter where I actually felt like I might have been halfway decent at. I could actually get some pretty decent headshots off of people with my sniper rifle. I kind of had some of the spawn locations memorized, and I felt like I was maybe half a badass. Whereas today, when if I ever go online to play, I very quickly put in my place. So I'm sure that engenders a feeling of nostalgia for it as well.
So one of my main memories for it was I was on the Quake 3 side. And it was like me and one other guy. And eventually I just had to come over to the Unreal Tournament side, partially just because more people. And I wound up just like I had to wind up liking it better. Or I guess I had to admit that I liked it better. These were the years where I definitely, to Andrew's thinking about something in the cultural Moses, that might be a bad tack to take this generation, considering this was the time where I was like, that's cool. Nah, I'm not going to like that. It was my natural inclination during some of these early years in this generation.
And now that's how Andrew's like. That's too popular. I can't like it.
No, we're all old men now. That's how we all are.
Yeah. No, I still like popular things.
Andrew, did you play this with us?
I don't think I ever played Quake 3 or Unreal Tournament with you guys. I mean, I might have played a match or two, but it was definitely not something I did regularly. I have played both Quake 3 and Unreal Tournament, but I think the number of times that I have played both of those games combined is under 10.
Yeah, well, you don't like first-person shooters, right?
I don't. And these games are part of the reason why. I think that they're good games, what they are, but they are not for me.
These are, kind of the epitome of if you don't like first-person shooters, you're not going to like these.
It doesn't have much else to offer.
Well, hallways all look the same. It's really easy to get lost. I had very bad aiming skills. I get shot down by people who are better at the game than me. The bots killed me. That's how bad I'm at this game, right?
Yeah, I mean, but they're also just so fast. At least my memory of them is they were very fast. Of course,
right? You respawn, you're right back into the action, so you don't lose anything. You just don't feel good for doing anything.
But I mean, even like mousing around, looking, and like moving and everything. But to be fair, we were coming from relatively slow games like Doom 2 and Duke Nukem and
GoldenEye.
You know, yeah, I mean, you're a spy, so I'll cut GoldenEye some slack. But all right, Andrew, what's your most fun with friends?
My most fun with friends game for multiplayer is Lego Star Wars, the video game.
Multiplayer.
Lego Star Wars is a pretty simple concept of a game, but it's also revolutionary in that the issue is you take the movie of a game, movie, you turn it into a plot-based video game, and you solve very light puzzles. And how do you solve these puzzles? You destroy everything on the level because they're all made out of bricks, and you break them all apart, and then you build them back together to make something that gets you through the puzzle. And that is a concept that was new and works really well. And the game has multiplayer that is really, really simple, intuitive, easy. And for some reason, that was exactly what I needed when I was playing with friends in that moment. There's something very simple and fun about sitting down with a friend and playing through a level or three of this story-based, destroy a thing, build a thing back up puzzle game, when it's no pressure, just a little bit of fun. And the early games in the LEGO series had more to them, where it was a little bit more structured in time and challenge. They've gotten to be a little bit easier and more about the movies and the interplay rather than the gameplay. But the early ones, this LEGO Star Wars as the new thing on the block, did it really, really well. And Star Wars is a plot that works really well for it. The characters are unique and distinctive and have different powers that all just fit well with this game, and it was a lot of fun to play with. Not necessarily these big party games, like what you're talking about, but one friend, sit down on the couch, play it for an hour or two, great fun.
One question I have is, have you played them with your children?
I have played LEGO games with my kids. They don't care for them as much, but I think it's partially just because they aren't necessarily as familiar with the underlying material as I am. And we're also usually using the newer stuff. The Hobbit is the one that I've played the most with my kids, and they like that one pretty well, but that's also super complicated because you've got the entire party of dwarves and they all do something different, so you need to get the right dwarf in, and it's a bit of a mess. It's a fun game, but it's a bit much.
Because that was going to be my counterpoint to you saying the newer games are simpler is we have Lego Batman for the original for Xbox 360, I guess, and my 8-year-old can mostly figure out some of the stuff. My 5-year-old, now 6-year-old, she rage quits that game. Now, granted, you can't die, which I can't remember if Lego Star Wars, if you die, do you have to like start over? You just spawn back immediately where you are, right?
You spawn back pretty much immediately, yeah.
Yeah.
I got trapped in one level where I did everything that I was supposed to do and nothing was advancing and I couldn't progress and I couldn't die because it just kept respawning me. So I actually had to reset the level. So that's very frustrating when that happens, but that's a bug. That's not the game working.
But also, I think, like you just said about The Hobbit, I think in Batman, all the characters have totally unique special abilities. They can change costumes. It's like, it's a lot compared to Star Wars was, do you want a lightsaber or a blaster? Done. It was a much easier choice of character, and I appreciated that more than the modern ones. I haven't played any of the Marvel or Jurassic Park or anything. So I guess it's my turn for most fun with friends.
Go for it.
So one that it would have been nice if one of us had said it. It wasn't mine either, but all of us should have had fond memories of playing ESPN NFL 2K5, which just barely sneaks into this generation, I think. But
it was on my list in this position for such a long time, and I said I just can't put it on there as most fun with friends because of our unique relationship with it, because that is something that's just too much a part of us. It is. I'll be coming back to it. Don't worry.
Yeah. So I just wanted to say that was my, since we at least Paul gave a runner up, and I think, I don't know if you did or not, I'm giving a runner up here. Paul, I'm glad you didn't pick Guitar Hero because the answer is Guitar Hero 2.
That's why I told you. I thought it was going to be something stupid like that.
Because
it's not Castlevania 2, it's Castlevania 3.
So Guitar Hero 1 was like the revelation, right? Like, wow, like you get an instrument and do all this. You go through the track list, Guitar Hero 2 blows Guitar Hero 1 away, like from top to bottom. Like I went through and checked. I mean, this is the one that has Freebird, it has Bark at the Moon. It just has all the song. Like, anytime I thought of a song that is in a Guitar Hero game, it's this, because I don't, I think I played three. I stopped at Guitar Hero with the numbered ones. I didn't go off into Aerosmith and Metallica and all the other offshoots at that point. And it was many years before I got into Rock Band, so you shouldn't have picked that one either. So far you're on track, Paul. But yeah, Guitar Hero. I mean, it was,
I avoided disaster. Congrats.
I mean, we had, at least I did. Maybe you guys probably didn't, but like, we had Guitar Hero parties. Before, you know, then it turned into Rock Band parties. But yeah, we would have Guitar Hero parties, and you get enough libations going at some point, and people are actually getting into like trying to swing the guitar over their head or playing it backwards or doing anything else. Like, then you have the one guy that's just there. He's like dead on. Like, he's there because he's gonna actually hit every note. It's like, come on, dude, just have some fun. Like,
you're a rock star.
Yeah, but like, the game really did, seriously, it made you feel like a rock star. I don't know how much you guys played the Guitar Heroes games, but I mean,
I played it some.
I played it. Yeah, I played it more later on. Definitely after its heyday, and it was fun. It was a good game, really well designed and executed. So I just never saw it as a party game. It was always something I was trying to do better for myself, you know, beat my own scores.
I basically played it by myself to get better in order to perform better at Guitar Hero parties. So
makes,
yeah,
total sense. A lot of people played it that way. I'm definitely abnormal.
Yeah, so for me it was definitely an in-person party. Like, this wasn't a game that I can't imagine going online and playing somebody. Like, there'd be no point. Why not just play by yourself? Play with yourself. Haha, whatever. that's definitely my pick for most fun with friends was Guitar Hero 2. So, Paul, we'll move on to the next category. The game with the best story.
All right, best story. So, this one was pretty easy. Actually, I had it in a different place, but I think it fits better here. And I think there's no denying that the best story of any game this entire generation has got to be the game where you learn that you are Darth Revan, or were Darth Revan. Spoiler alert.
Did you have to spoil it?
Yes, I did. I understand, but there's no way, there's no possible way you can discuss this. And, and Travis and I recorded, by the time you hear this, probably a long time ago, but for us, somewhat recently, where we tried to dance around a spoiler in a movie, and it sounded awful, and I'm not going to do that here to you. I'm just going to own it right now. Knights of the Old Republic.
Which Star Wars game is this one?
This is Knights of the Old Republic.
Yeah.
Okay, KOTOR.
Yeah, KOTOR. Or however you want to call it.
You know a game has reached that level when you know it by its acronym.
Yeah. But this game, it has everything. It was pretty sure it's the first BioWare game I played, and so I had no idea what to expect. The depth of the characters, the humor and the interactions, the twist, right? Like, you're going through this game, hearing about this terrible bad guy, Darth Revan, who was killed, and you find out that you are him. There's also elements of choice. You can choose to be light side or dark side throughout the game, and it impacts the course of the game, which is pretty novel for me, at least at the time. And of course, with the BioWare games, there's the romance option. You know, do you attempt to romance Bastila Shan, whatever. I believe it's the same voice actress that voices Femme Shep, if I'm not mistaken. Meh, blank stares, whatever. I'm gonna go with it. I'm gonna say it's the same voice actress. But that was also kind of a whoa moment. Like, oh my god, there's romance in this game, and it's kind of well done, right? It's not like some sort of childish, you know, throwaway thing. It was a relationship forged over the course of many hours playing this game, and it felt like something kind of natural and not just a weird like achievement that you can earn, right? So yeah, Knights of the Republic. I will harbor no disagreement on this point, gentlemen.
Well, I can't disagree with you because I haven't played it.
Oh my god.
Oh.
Okay. Well, you need to play it and forget everything I just said.
No.
You picked a Star Wars game
since, and I have had a miserable time with every single one of them.
What BioWare games have you played?
Most notably, Mass Effect.
Okay, that is kind of a first-person shooter, so just ignore that. How about Dragon Age?
Okay, I played some Dragon Age. Do you have a problem with Dragon Age?
There's a couple, but what was yours?
The most irritating thing in Dragon Age is the real-time combat.
You can do a turn-based, can't you?
No, you can pause it.
Oh, well, whatever.
It's the stories are interesting, the characters and world building and lore is always interesting, but the mechanics always suck, which means that they're better off as books, not games.
I was going to say, or Andrew just wants to see the movie.
Yeah, you know, KOTOR would make an excellent movie. That's what something that Disney should be making. Some prequels
like that. And
that's
I think there's a lot of room for stuff like that. Yeah. That gets to your point, though, that this is a good story. What you're describing, what you told me about, is like, yeah, I can see that being a good story. I'm not going to disagree with you. I just don't think that you're correct. But Travis probably agrees with you more, so I'll let him say a few words.
Well, I'm going to let you... What's your game? What's your story?
This is my story. Final Fantasy X.
Ah, wow. That's kind of a hot take, isn't it?
Final Fantasy X has a Final Fantasy story that for the first time in a bunch of games actually makes a certain kind of sense. Final Fantasy VIII, the story is batshit insane time travel, and then it gets weird. Final Fantasy IX's story is incomprehensible. Yeah. Final Fantasy VII's story is relatively straightforward, but bad. Final Fantasy VI's story was good, but that was like 4 generations ago almost. It's a really long time. 2 generations. It was a long, long time between Final Fantasy VI and Final Fantasy X. Final Fantasy X comes in, and the mechanics are back, the graphics are amazing, but the story is on point. And Tidus, as a character, gets a lot of hate, and I can understand it. He is a controversial character. I did like Tidus, and I understand that that is the hot take. But more than that, I liked Tidus's story and the entirety of the story of Final Fantasy X because it tells something that is epic in scale, the way all Final Fantasies are, but actually still about the people and the characters rather than about the world, the way so many other Final Fantasies are. You have characters in the world, and it's about the world. Final Fantasy X's story is about the characters, and that is why it succeeds as a great story.
Yeah, I agree with you about 8 and 9. As much as I like the characters of 9, I don't remember anything. No, I like 10. 10, I put, that's probably the, I was going to say the second most played Final Fantasy, maybe it's third. But considering there's 15 of them to choose from, that's still a pretty high ranking.
Yeah, I have a hard time ranking Final Fantasy X in the Final Fantasy pantheon, because 2/4 and 3/6 are so good. You say, well, that makes 10 like the third best one, and that just, this bronze. I don't know, Final Fantasy X could be better than 4, and 4 is just all about nostalgia for me. I could even see an argument where 10 is better than 6. It's harder to see that argument, but I think it could be there, where Final Fantasy X could be the best Final Fantasy game in the series.
Although now that I'm thinking about it, I can probably name more characters in 10 than any but 7 and 6.
Yeah, and there are fewer characters than 6. But the characters are more impactful. They have You have a deeper relationship with them. You also have perhaps a deeper relationship with the Aeons, your summons, because they are more personal. They have personality that the Espers and summons from the previous games didn't necessarily have. You've got some of that with Final Fantasy IV when you got to the land of the summoned monsters in the underworld, because you actually met them and interacted with them. But for the most part, they're just sprites on the screen doing stuff. Final Fantasy X's were, if you got to know them as people. And you got to understand that they were people, essentially.
I have to wonder if some of the hate that's given to, and maybe I'm overestimating the online hate that's given to 10, but how much of it comes from the fact that they made 10-2? But
I don't know about that. You know, there was the decision to go into sequels was a little bit awkward. I'm not going to say otherwise. I have not made it all the way through Final Fantasy X-2. I still think that the majority of the hate that I see for it comes down to Tidus. And Tidus wasn't in 10-2.
Right.
Really, I mean, so if Tidus is the problem, then maybe 10-2 isn't the problem, but Tidus seems to be the problem. People hate the forced laugh. They hate the character, and I just don't get that.
He's better than Cloud, probably, honestly.
Absolutely, I agree, I mean... but you read online and people say otherwise.
And I didn't like 8, so he's better than every character in 8.
I did like 8, but 8 is a special kind of crazy.
All right. I don't know if Paul has anything to add because it's a Final Fantasy game, and I don't know if he's played any but one. So,
is this the one with Spike Ball?
Yes, this is the
Blitzball.
Oh, Blitzball. Sorry, my bad.
Oh, you probably watched me play more Blitzball than you cared to have watched back in college.
Yeah, I still have nightmares about like the stupid intro scene to Blitzball. Oh my god,
yeah. Talk about bad mechanics, though. Yeah, but I saw an interesting article about if they updated Blitzball and actually made it a real sports game, could actually be a good game.
Yeah.
The parts of it that were good, in my opinion, were all the spreadsheet aspects. And I don't think that makes a very good sports game most of the time, even though that's what's under the hood of Madden is all the spreadsheets.
Right.
Is it better or worse than Quidditch?
Better than Quidditch.
Better than Quidditch. Okay.
That's a hot take.
There you go. Andrew's full of them tonight.
I'm not going to derail us, but yeah, I think it was a podcast I listened to. They broke down of why Quidditch is a terrible, terrible game.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the rules don't really work out very well.
Yeah, or maybe it was you. Maybe it was one of you two. But anyway, go back and listen to all of our podcasts and let us know which episode somebody said Quidditch was a bad game. But we're going to talk about good games, and Paul was right. It's Knights of the Old Republic. See? That's the best story. Although my runner-up was Final Fantasy X. That's actually the game I had first, but then I reached further in the alphabet and said, oh, it's Star Wars, Knights of the Old Republic. I figured
there had to be some Star Wars game on your list, and so KOTOR made my short list of games to choose for you, Travis, but I couldn't remember you talking about this game ever, so I couldn't select it. I did almost pick Final Fantasy X, but I'm glad that I didn't because it sounds like it probably didn't make your list.
But yeah, I mean, everything Paul said, spoiling the end, find out that you're the bad guy, which was good for me because I totally went dark side, and this was, I've played other BioWare games, and I know Paul's going to, and most of the internet is probably going to disagree with me on that it worked in Mass Effect. I think that this was the game where the light side, dark side duality of the choices you could make works the best because it's so ingrained in Star Wars as opposed to other worlds, which should be more gray. And if you add that middle option, to me, kind of dilutes it a little bit. And I did play Jade Empire, which was, I think, in between KOTOR and Mass Effect.
I don't know, but that sounds about right.
And I mean, yeah, it didn't tie in as I thought nearly as well to this. I mean, this ties into like what powers you can get, even if I recall right.
Right. Well, and honestly, I think it ties into the story so well too, right? Because the whole story is about, and again, I'm going to just dive fully into the spoilers about how even the character of Revan to start off with is not an entirely evil character. He is fighting for the greater good as he sees it, even though it involves essentially declaring war against what most people consider to be the good guys. But then he gets his mind erased, and the Jedi Council is trying to instill they're like, can he be good again, right? Can he be a Jedi? Can he disavow the dark side? And you've got Bastila kind of as his the angel on his shoulder, and maybe his former nature as the devil on his shoulder. And it also gives the player an opportunity, even if you're playing them light side, halfway through, and you get this twist, suddenly you have a pretty compelling reason to change to the dark side at that point. You can feel betrayed by what the Jedi Council did, and be like, well, to hell with all of you, right? And so it's really good at evoking those kind of same emotions from the player as Revan himself was probably feeling.
Right. And just, I mean, I said Guitar Hero makes me feel like a rock star. This was the first game that made me feel like a Jedi, like going around, like whizzing your lightsaber around, blocking blaster bolts in semi-real-time combat, if I recall. Like, it's not totally turn-based.
Mm-hmm. Didn't Bastila have the double-edged lightsaber before Darth Maul made it popular?
No, Darth Maul would have been 99.
Was KOTOR after that?
I think it would
have. It could have come out roughly the same time, but this game's generations are 1999 to 2005.
Okay.
So it would have been on the cusp, or definitely later.
I'm KOTOR.
I don't
know
what year KOTOR came out.
Pretty sure
it's certainly later.
2003 is what I have written down, so yeah, you're right.
Yeah, it's definitely after that. Okay. But yeah, I think this might have been, I'm sure it was in some other Star Wars lore, but I'm pretty sure this is this game taught me like how lightsabers get their colors. It was from kyber crystals. Stuff like, so I mean, like, there's just a lot of lore that unfortunately got decanonized, but whatever, like, this is still Star Wars.
But and to emphasize like the impact that this game has had, like, Malak and Revan and Bastila, they've all made their way into the extended, or before what's it called now, the old legends or whatever,
just
Disney,
just legends it. I think
legends, yeah, they worked their way into those stories, and
I think they will eventually, like, they're just, Disney needs to learn to listen to the Star Wars fans, and at some point, something like this has to be made into a movie. I mean, they've the Clone Wars cartoon show taught them to like bring in characters like Thrawn, or no, I guess that was Rebels, but like to bring some of these characters that they decanonized back in. I mean, it's printing money if they do that. Like if they're, even if it's not called KOTOR, if it just has the Old Republic in it, it's going to be make money.
It would make a hell of a Disney Plus show, you know?
Yeah, and now that that's an option, like, that's probably even better, because then you can almost make it an anthology series, too, of, like, you don't have to have it follow one character every single, or, you know, one group of characters, or, yeah, make it, you can make it as wide and as narrow as you want. You could do something like Babylon 5 even with it, right? I mean, like...
Yeah, and I can't believe both of us went through this without even mentioning, what is it, HK-47? I
think HK-47, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Greetings, Meatbag. Yeah, the surprisingly hostile assassination droid. It's just so many great characters in KOTOR.
Yeah, so that's the... Well, I guess I can't disagree with Andrew either, because Final Fantasy X was my close runner-up for this.
I'll disagree with him for you.
All right.
I'm basically not even paying attention to what you guys are saying. I'm just running through my head how great a story Final Fantasy X was. It's like, oh yeah, then that moment happened, and then that moment happened. It's a good story.
He's just thinking, ooh, Riku, Yuna... Change those dresses. All right. Yeah. All right. Or no, what was
did
the...
Did nothing for the story of the original game.
What was
had
the...
a great ending.
Wasn't 10 the third lady was the lady in black leather straps?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She came in, she was added as a new character.
Okay. All right, Paul, let's get off this topic and move on to best music.
Best music. Okay. So I had a little bit of a hard time coming with this one until I remembered... one particular song, and I'm going to do a little bit of a backstory here. Probably many years ago now, I went to Wolf Trap to go to one of their video game music live performances or whatever. They had a you know, an actual orchestra and singers and everything. And actually, while we were there, I'm 95% certain I saw Sid Meier himself walking through the crowd. And I'm pretty sure of that because he ended up actually speaking on the stage before, I believe, one of the concluding songs, where the song played was Baba Yetu, which is, I might splice that into this episode, we'll see. I think it's going to be, it will probably be instantly recognizable if I played it for you guys, but it's the opening song to Civilization IV. And it is the first piece of video game music to be nominated for and win a Grammy Award. And it is... pretty famous for the it's played along with an opening cinematic, which is honestly still quite powerful. It kind of the song is being played while you're seeing these great moments in human history, right? The creation of the pyramids, the wars being fought, all the way to more recent American history with Abraham Lincoln and talking about the Gettysburg Address and whatnot. And it's it goes, as with Civilization games, it goes forward into the launching spaceships to Alpha Centauri or whatever it is, to complete the space, the science mission. And so that, on the back of that alone, I am picking Civilization 4 for best music. But honestly, I went through to try and find supporting evidence, and there's also a lot of great varied music for Civilization. You look, every single Civilization has a piece of music that goes, that's kind of thematically sounds, you know, you have a Japanese sounding music for Japan, Russian themed for Russia. It's quite an achievement. So that's why I'm picking Civilization 4 as my best music for this generation.
You're mentioning that introductory song, and I have no idea what it is, and yet it's still running through my head. I'm like, it's that song, isn't it? And I'm like 95% confident, and that's kind of ridiculous.
So if the song that's going through your head is the Lord's Prayer sung in Swahili, then yes, that is correct.
Because I don't know. I don't know. But I think it is.
Baba Yetu Yetu Yetu.
I think that's it. I can't say you're doing a great job with it, but I think that's the right song. So that's the fact that you're able to describe a song and I'm able to pick it up and say, yeah, I think that's the song that I know that you're talking about. That does speak to what you're saying, that song at least is iconic.
Yeah, it's a great song. It works wonderfully for the cutscene that it's playing over, and it's very memorable.
And I'm going to rain on the parade. I don't think I ever played Civilization 4, so I have no attachment to the song. And I have listened to the video game live album that has that song on it. And I had to skip it because I was like, I have no idea what this is. This doesn't sound interesting. I'm going to the next song.
Oh my God, Travis. Now you're sounding like Andrew. It's just bad take after bad take.
I think it would be interesting if you both had the same attachment to the song absent the game.
Well, I've never played Civilization
4. Okay, so there you go.
But I can't say I'm hugely attached to the song. I like it, and I recognize it, but if you'd asked me if I had heard it, I was like, oh yeah, I know that song. I don't know what it's called, I don't know what it's from, but it's a pretty cool song.
And it is. I mean, yeah, I think it's worth 3 minutes or whatever it takes to look up and maybe even pair the video along with it just to kind of give you some context. Because, yeah, the song is in Swahili, and unless you speak Swahili, you'll have no idea what's being said, and it might be kind of meaningless to you, especially without that attachment to Civilization IV. But I'm disappointed in you, Travis. Disappointed.
Not upset, just disappointed.
Yeah, I'm not even upset.
All right, so Andrew, that was a good choice. You got at least one good song, but I want to go for more than one good song. So the best music for this generation was a hard pick for me, too, because I was like, man, there aren't actually all that many games with really good music. There's a couple that are obvious, but I can't put them in here because I need them elsewhere kind of thing. Fine. Oh, wait, no, there's this great option. Here it is. Why didn't I think of this sooner? Dance Revolution.
Wow.
It's all about the music, and the music is actually really good. You have some classic stuff, and then you have some new stuff. You got some, you know, 90s style dance with some strange rhythms that you're dancing along to. And the game itself was incredibly fun and getting you to dance to it. But if the game did not have good music, the mechanics would not have been nearly as interesting. You needed to have something to try and hit things in time to. And the better the song, the more fun you're going to have with it. So, I mean, it really comes down to that's good music to dance to.
I'm going to be honest, I did not see Dance Dance Revolution on my list. Probably because it's primarily an arcade game, and maybe I skipped over it when it was a console.
There's a lot on the console.
Yeah, I may have gone with Dance Dance Revolution had that gotten in front of me. That is a strong contender. And I'm not even the biggest Dance Dance. I mean, I played it. I'm pretty sure that we had a Vegas trip where I like stayed up all night playing Dance Dance Revolution in one of the arcades one night. And yes, you're absolutely right. There's some great Asian songs, some great Asian versions of American pop songs, remixes of American pop songs. There's a lot of good music in there. So for once, you're not completely wrong, Andrew.
See, that's what I come to expect from Paul. I'm right, and he admits it.
Once every like 30 picks or so.
All right, Travis, what do you have for music?
All right, well, I'm trying to figure out if one reason why I was skipping past Baba Yetu on the Video Games Live album is if because the song I really wanted was later on in the album, and that is because of the song Theme of Laura from Silent Hill 2 is fantastic, and the rest of the game music, so Silent Hill 2 is a survival horror game. I only played Silent Hill 2 because I went to GameStop to pre-order Silent Hill 4, and the guy talked me into buying 3, and then talked me into buying 2, and I said, well, I might as well start...
He's a good salesperson.
And probably the only reason he didn't talk me into 1 is because 1 is on PlayStation, and the other 3 are all PlayStation 2. So I said, fine, I'll start with Silent Hill 2, and I never even wound up playing 3 or 4, because Silent Hill 2 was so good. And that song in particular, like, if you're splicing music in, you should splice a little bit of that song in, because it's just awesome. And it fits you're talking about Baba Yetu fitting the cutscene of the game. Like, the parts of the game where they bring this song in are gut-wrenchingly emotional, because when you're reaching certain emotional high points of the game, like where you're figuring out like why you're in Silent Hill, what has happened to the people in Silent Hill, things like that. Like, and it's truly memorable. And then obviously the game itself. I mean, the rest of the soundtrack is obviously way more atmospheric because you're just wandering around a town filled with monsters and fog. Although you do have like when Pyramid Head shows up. And I seem to recall the music for the movie being fairly close to the music for this game, but we're not counting on movies. But so it's this. A very close run up for me. And I was actually wondering if, based on Andrew's guess of Tony Hawk 2 Last Generation, he was going to guess this game.
Tony Hawk 3?
No, it was Crazy Taxi.
That's a good choice, too.
Because it was the first time I ever heard Offspring's All I Want. The problem is, that's like a minute and a half long song, and there's only 6 songs on the entire Crazy Taxi soundtrack. So yeah. It kind of wears itself out after a bit. True, I picked Theme of Laura. I picked Silent Hill 2 because of Theme of Laura. It's one song, but it's not played in a loop. It's used in these specific places, and then just listening to it at Video Games Live. I went to some of those concerts, Paul, so I don't know if we were at the same ones. I'm sure we are at least at one of the same ones. So you probably have heard the theme Alora from there. And like I said, if you play it, you'll probably also be like, yeah, Travis likes Castlevania music. He likes that. It's not the same. It's not really the same, but at Video Games Live, they play it on guitar, and it really hits it in.
Well, I don't recall I don't think I've played Silent Hill 2 at all. And I don't recall this particular song at all. I haven't listened to it yet. But I'm very interested in listening to this after the episode and seeing if it has the same kind of emotional reaction without any kind of context, yeah. Right? Like I'm positive that a lot of this has to do with the connections you've made to events in the game.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, just like last generation where I said, the real best music should have been Symphony of the Night, but I picked Quake because in the context of playing Quake, I liked that music. Absent the game, yeah, I'd rather go listen to a real Nine Inch Nails album.
Mm-hmm.
I have not sought anything else out by the composer of this song for Silent Hill 2 outside of listening to the Silent Hill 2 soundtrack.
Just to reiterate my point for a second, I still intentionally listen to DDR music when I'm not dancing DDR.
Oh, no, yeah. I think it was almost like my eyes glazed over at all the DDRs.
There's a lot of it, yeah.
And so I wasn't really... Also, like, this was a hard generation for me because I would hit a game and be like, ooh, did I play it on Xbox, PlayStation 2, or GameCube? When in reality, since we don't list what console we played a game on, it really doesn't matter. I should have just put down DDR, and maybe then when I went through my list, I might have remembered it. Now, I tried to put Dance Dance Revolution music on for my daughter's 6th birthday party. The problem is, like, the first song that came up on random is, like, some song about, like, damn, what a bitch, or something like that. I don't know what it was. But I was like, maybe I should stick with Initial D, because I know there's nothing truly offensive in any of those songs. All right, now that I've brought us to a screeching halt, Paul, your most memorable whatever of Generation 6.
All right, so Half-Life 2. I still have... I don't have any build up for that. Just Half-Life 2. There are so many moments of that game that just stand out to me for I'll just say excellence, right? Like the opening scene, it's just like it's great at kind of 'cause you're Gordon Freeman, you're coming back after years and years of being away, and I don't even recall exactly what happened. I think you're put into stasis by the G-Man. The Half-Life story never quite made a ton of sense to me, but you're coming back to a drastically different Earth, one that is being ruled with an iron fist by these alien overseers, and you get it's got that Half-Life polish of all these kind of cut scenes where you're still in the game engine, you're still able to move around and look and see what's happening, and you can see all these little interactions going on all around you. Everything from that to the first time you meet Alex Vance, who I think I remain to this day like shocked at how much of a leap forward it was in terms of a realistic seeming character, full stop, not just in terms of graphics and how she looked, but also like the way that her eyes would follow you and she would turn and follow you as you were walking around. It wasn't just an NPC just standing there stoically, always staring blankly straight ahead. The voice acting for Alex was great, and the ability, and she was an actually helpful ally during while playing the game, not just like standing in a doorway and getting in your way so you can't get through. To Dog, her pet, to the varying environments and the story that would happen as you're playing through the game, Ravenholm and all these other things that go on, to the gravity gun. How amazing was the gravity gun as a weapon that on the surface you're like, what the hell is this? And I can pick things up. How is that going to be helpful? Well, it becomes really helpful later in the game. Half-Life 2 just had so many memorable moments to it, and this is one where I went back and forth with Knights of the Old Republic, because to me the single most memorable moment of this generation is probably that aforementioned Revan twist. But in terms of just a sheer number of cumulative memorable moments, to me, I think Half-Life 2 has to take the cake.
Oh, speaking of which, is Portal use the Half-Life 2 engine?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how tied. So there's definitely a reference to what is it, Aperture Science, I believe, in Half-Life 2. And I'm pretty sure it uses the Half-Life 2 engine. So, yes, I guess you could say that the cake is a lie. The cake that Half-Life 2 takes is a lie. But that does not count as towards my love of Half-Life 2.
No, that was curiosity if they used the same. Because I never played Half-Life 2. I played Portal, though.
Oh, my God. You should play it. I bet you it probably still holds up, including graphically. Like, it's probably not going to embarrass itself graphically, which is
amazing. The question is, do you have to play Half-Life 1 to enjoy Half-Life 2?
I don't think so. Okay. I don't like I said, the story for Half-Life has always been kind of an eh. I mean, inside each game, there's compelling story to it, but the overarching story of like who the G-Man is and the Combine and what they stand for, it's all kind of a confusing mess. And you know, the fact that they never made a Half-Life 3 to conclude the story just goes to show that like maybe they kind of agreed. But yeah, I'd certainly recommend it. If you do decide to do it, go for the orange box, because the orange box also contains episodes 1 and 2.
He doesn't have his orange box anymore, sorry.
Yeah.
How do you think I played Portal? I bought the orange box and I only played Portal.
Oh my God. What the hell is wrong with you?
I think maybe I played Team Fortress once or twice. I was like, nah, I don't need this. And I had every intention of playing Half-Life 2 and Half-Life 2 Episode 1, because I think that was in the orange box as well. And just, it was a busy generation, I guess.
Yeah, well, now that you have a ton of time, as soon as you have kids, you can go back and play your orange box now.
Oh yeah.
No, he can't.
That's the joke.
No, you're missing the joke.
That he doesn't have the orange box
anymore. He Correct. Sold his copy of Orange Box to me.
Well, then go steal it back.
I have Travis's Orange Box.
Go steal it from Andrew, then.
I did not pick up that I sold it to you. Have you played Half-Life 2 then, Andrew?
No, of course not.
Oh, my God. What the hell's wrong with you people?
I haven't played Half-Life 1. Why would I play Half-Life 2? I don't play first-person shooters.
But
I'm not a huge Valve fan. I don't like Team Fortress. I've played Portal. I haven't beaten it. What would make you think that I've played Half-Life 2?
Because it's apparently the most memorable game.
This is a contender for best game of the generation. I'll just throw it out there.
I mean, you're just plain wrong. I mean, I understand there are a lot of people who agree with you, but that doesn't mean that you're right. Just because it's popular doesn't make it right.
No.
That's right.
That's a better chance of it being right.
That's 1999 Travis talk right there. Just because it's popular doesn't make it right. All right.
Doesn't make it good.
What
the most memorable moments of video gaming in the sixth generation was?
Let's see if it's something we even. Yeah, see if it's something we even played.
It is a ridiculous number of explosions on the screen. Thank you.
Oh, Bangayo. Bangayo!
That game had such an insane story and such insane gameplay that there is no way that you can play it for even more than 5 minutes and not have a memory etched into your brain of it. And it quite likely is going to be etched into your television as well. The missile fury of these bullets bouncing off these things, bouncing off objects, blowing things up, turning into huge numbers of fruits that you collect for points.
Fruits.
And the points don't matter. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's insane. And the script is it's this beautifully intentionally mangled translation of a really bad script. Like they said, okay, this script doesn't make any sense, so we're going to have this fun making sure that the words aren't translated right and the grammar's all bad on purpose.
Absolutely
on purpose. Yes, it's all your base are belong to us style of script writing, and it just works. It's absolutely hilarious. You have the mecha robot that has the two powers. You switch between the boy and the girl twins who use your homing missiles or your bouncing bullets, and you just wreck everything and try to get to the exit and beat the boss. And the gameplay mechanic of it is that the closer you are to dying, the more likely you are to be hit by an enemy missile or a weapon, the more missiles or shots you fire back in response, eliminating that incoming attack and destroying everything around you. And it takes all of the power of the Dreamcast to animate these hundreds of projectiles coming out of you at once. It is insane. And in completely memorable experience from beginning to end.
Okay, I'm glad you finally got on mentioning this is a Dreamcast game. Apparently it was on Nintendo 64. No one played it on Nintendo 64. This is a quintessential Dreamcast game, right? Like, it's crazy in all the right ways.
It's Dreamcast all over.
And yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, the fact that it brought a Generation 6 console to its knees with slowdown is amazing.
Repeatedly, like several times, and not in this bad way. You're like, oh, it's chugging. No, that was part of the joy of it. It's like, yes, more missiles, please.
Yeah. I have no idea how I ever heard about this game, but I'm so glad I got it on the Dreamcast. I'm assuming I have to have been the one that introduced it to you, or did...
Well, I have to... Yeah, I think so. I imagine we played it on your Dreamcast, and then later on, I bought your friend's Dreamcast, and he sold me his copy of Mangayo as well. That was a great deal for me, because I got the console and the game, and a bunch of other games, too, for a very good price, all things considered. And I still have it, and it's quite a collector's item, because it's hard to find.
Yeah, although it's so... Probably somebody bought my copy from GameStop a long time ago. Yeah, that Bangayo is definitely, it's on my list of worthy of discourse. So I'm glad you brought it up now. Because that game, I don't know if it, although it did get a DS sequel, so apparently.
Yeah, and also that was on the Xbox Arcade. Okay. It's Bangayo Missile Fury, and it's the same gameplay mechanics, but it's just not as much fun. Yeah. I think part of the reason that I had so much fun with it on the Dreamcast is that if I ever did badly on a level, it was no sweat, no pressure. Keep going, do it again. And it would let you through at a certain point on certain levels. Like, okay, you died a bunch of times. You just want to move forward. Once it got to the Xbox system, there were achievements for actually beating the levels. And that felt like I was pressured to do it. And that I had to get better at the game. And it's a hard game. The game is hard. It made it harder for me to actually enjoy the experience. Whereas what made it so fun and memorable was just having a crazy good time. And enjoying the colorful explosions on the screen. That was really what made it memorable. And trying to do something more than that made it something that wasn't as much fun for me.
All right. I know Paul was in the room at some point, but I don't know if he ever actually played Bangayo. So.
It doesn't ring a bell.
Yeah, you probably were just playing Heroes of Might and Magic or something on your computer instead.
Quite possibly.
All right. Most memorable, I was, again, torn between two games and... Sorry, Paul. Shadow of the Colossus is runner-up. It's definitely memorable.
It's better than Devil May Cry.
I think it's had a lot of... You see that game's lineage in a lot of other games. Like the four divine beasts in Breath of the Wild, you can kind of see taking some inspiration from the Colossi in Shadow of the Colossus. And just... I know I'm talking about Shadow of the Colossus when it's not my game. But
rub the salt in the wound, huh?
But yeah, just and the lonely atmosphere, like you are a lone warrior. But you know who else was a lone warrior for a long time before he ran into this game?
Link?
Dante?
Toon Link. That's right. Wind Waker. And this might be kind of a looking back more than in the moment, but like how much people hated the Wind Waker before they even played it. Because they had the Twilight Princess trailer, basically. And they were like, ooh, we want that. And then they were like, well, you know what? Here's Toon Link. And everybody's like, what the hell? But in retrospect, like Wind Waker is, it's so different from everything else of its generation.
That's 1999 Travis talking.
Possibly, yes. But like it's just so unique, and I mean, and Toon Link caught on. Like all the DS Links and like Minish Cap Link are all Toon Link. He's in Smash now and stuff. But this game, like the speaking of twists, I won't ruin the twist for the end of this one. But like the twist ending at this with like the relationship of Ganon and Tetra and Link and what the ocean is and all like blows your mind at the end of that game the first time you play it, and then you dig into some Zelda lore and you find out like actually like how important this game is to the, granted bolted on after the fact, but overarching story of all the Zelda games together. But yeah, a lot of it just comes down to the art style of this game. Like doesn't look like, I can't think of a single other game that looks like this game. The closest would be something like Parappa the Rappa, right? Or, like that's the best I can think of. I know it's just cel shading, or I guess it's just cel shading, but like just how they stripped everything down. Cause that was part of what I read in the art book for Zelda, was they intentionally were stripping everything down to its very basics and down to the fact of like Miyamoto had insisted that that Link always have like his vest, the top of his vest always had to have like the little cross lacing. I forget what it's called now. And they took that off on Toon Link. And he's like, no, you got to put that on. And they're like, no, Miyamoto, we're going to leave it off. but just that they thought they were thinking to that level of detail, like we're gonna not include this quote unquote canon part of Link. Granted, canon was like four games at that point, or I guess more than that. Forgot Paul's Link's Awakening.
Yeah.
but no, I don't know if you guys, what you, your guys' experiences with Wind Waker, but oh, and then the last thing will just be, I unlocked the Wind Waker gear in Breath of the Wild, and that's totally what I wear. You don't look like Toon Link, but it's a reason, not a reasonable facsimile, but the, just the fact that it's called the Hat of the Wind, the Tunic of the Wind, and the Legs of the Wind, I'm like, yep, I'm wearing those.
I have nothing to say. I've never played Wind Waker.
I was going to say, I don't know if either one of you played Wind Waker at all, so...
Yeah. The last time I played a Legends of Zelda game was the late 1980s.
And it was Zelda 2. So, all right. That was...
So at least Andrew's not telling you you're wrong, which he says to me every time I say something.
Well, so wait. Is most memorable. It's impossibly wrong with most memorable unless you pick Half-Life 2.
Well, I noticed how... You found mine wrong.
Wait, what was your memorable, Andrew? I already forgot. Sorry. No. I'm serious.
Burn.
I know that came off as intended, but I'm actually serious.
It's Bongayo.
Bongayo, okay.
The one that you agreed with.
Yeah, at least I played that. None of us had played Half-Life 2, and neither of you played Wind Waker, so Bongayo must be the most memorable. You know, I think this category is always going to be kind of the most personal as well, right? I mean, that's the whole point is it's memorable to you.
I always liked it because I hoped it would give us good stories, and I'm enjoying the stories we're getting, so I think we're doing well.
All right, but now for the actual...
The real ranker.
Yeah, creme de la creme, is that... Well, Paul, what is your personal best game of Generation 6?
Well, yeah,
better be Sid Meier's Alpha Centauri.
Yeah, congratulations, Travis. It's Sid Meier's Alpha Centauri. No, congratulations, both of you. It's, yes, hands down, Sid Meier's Alpha Centauri. It is, as much as I love Civilization, and I do think this is why Civilization 2 didn't get picked earlier, and part of it is that Alpha Centauri is, I think, the game that is yet to be surpassed in terms of the epitome of that kind of genre. Part of it might be the fact that I've always leaned a little bit more towards sci-fi. I like the sci-fi theme of it. The future technologies is kind of cool, but it goes way beyond that. It contains, I want to say, 7 factions, I actually can't quite remember, that play drastically differently. It's not just a different skin and maybe 1 or 2 bonuses if you're the Russians versus the Germans, or the British versus the Zulus, or whatever it is. These are factions that play remarkably differently with different strategies and different powers. And there's actually a story behind it too. If you pay attention, the planet is, you learn, this isn't really a spoiler, but it's kind of a sentient being that will kind of fight against you as you're terraforming it. And there's local wildlife that will be progressively harder as the game goes on. It introduced aspects like when you terraform the terrain, raising and lowering the terrain, it affects the terrain of your neighbors, which introduces different ways of kind of indirect warfare, where you can kind of raise the terrain on your ground so that there's less rainfall on your opponent's territory. It had elections where, depending on the population of your civilization, you had a different number of votes, and you could, if you had enough allies who would vote for you, you could get elected as president of Alpha Centauri and pass favorable legislation to your civilization. And perhaps the most revolutionary of all, which I really haven't seen anywhere else and I really miss, was the complete ability to craft your own units. You didn't have to get stuck with the default of, oh, this is your infantry and this is the catapult and this is the cavalry. You could slap together all sorts of different upgrades onto the mobile chassis and have one uber unit that could go, that could move like 3 spaces and had maximum attack and maximum defense and was a veteran and all sorts of other things. It would just cost you like 3,000 production units or whatever it was. But I can't even begin to estimate how much time I spent just playing with that simple editor there to try and find different types of units to craft for my civilization. It's just such a great game. Spent so much time playing it, including with friends. This is a game that could legitimately have ended up in multiple categories this year. I played it with friends a lot. It had so many memorable moments. But I think the best place for it to be is for my own personal best game of this generation. Finite.
Never played it.
Oh my god.
All of the innovations that you're talking about, Paul, every single one of them already existed in Master of Orion 2.
I don't believe that to be true.
But that being said, you're not wrong in that Alpha Centauri is an incredibly good game. It has great depth, great strategy, and I think one of the things that it does surprisingly well, and it's actually very important for games in this genre, because there are plenty of games that do depth of strategy and multiple win conditions extremely well, but they're hard to get into and hard to play, and they take forever. And Alpha Centauri can be a long game, but it doesn't have to be. And more importantly, it's also incredibly approachable. It takes the Civilization style of just one more turn and makes it something that is one more turn for anybody, whereas I do acknowledge that Mass of Orion as an example, but more so more hardcore traditional strategy games that you might get into these days are much, much harder to get into for the average gamer. You sit down and say, I'm going to play this game, and you have to play 4 hours of a tutorial before you even know how to build a city, let alone how to build a unit. And it's just not fun unless you already have a lot of experience in the genre. Whereas Alpha Centauri, you can sit down never having played any of these games before, and you're going to do okay. You're not going to win, but you're not making huge mistakes. And you can't even find the end turn button on some of these games. Alpha Centauri has simplicity at heart and works because of it, while still having enough strategic elements to make it a very fun and interesting game. And this, it does work. It's well designed. Sid Meier makes good games. Alpha Centauri is fantastic, but it's not the best 4X game.
Well, it's the best 4X game of this generation, and possibly of all time. True.
It's definitely better than Master of Orion 3, so you're right there.
And I know I mentioned it, but I can't stress enough how awesome it was to have those seven factions that are so different. And they also represent different kind of... Actually, I almost wonder if they're supposed to represent like the seven deadly sins, because each of them are kind of embody extremist political positions that you find even today, right? There's like the uber capitalist, the uber environmentalist, the person who values science above ethics, the big government, you know, UN peacekeeper force. They all have like their strengths and the reasons that you want to play as that faction, and maybe see as some of yourself in that faction. And they all have their weaknesses and the reasons why you're like, ooh, those people could arguably be the villain of the series. And it's just incredibly complex the way they handled that, and really great. And that's it.
I've stated why I disagree, but I think overall I agree with you more. It's a really good game, and I'm sorry that Travis hasn't played it. I think, you know, everyone probably ought to give it a shot, and I think it's one of the ones that slips under the radar. Everyone talks about Civilization. No one talks about Alpha Centauri. Even people who know Sid Meier's collection of games, they'll talk about Pirates more than they talk about Alpha Centauri. And that's just criminal. Alpha Centauri is a really good game.
Pirates is a good game.
I'm not saying Pirates isn't a good game.
Right.
They can both be good.
They can both be good.
Can't we all just get along?
Alpha Centauri is better than Pirates. But
anyway. I've never played Pirates. There you go, Travis.
Yeah. Touché.
I see what you did there.
So is it my turn to talk about my best game of the generation?
It's your turn to talk about Diablo 2, yes.
Look what the stone has done to me.
Sounds like Diablo 2. Yep. Finally.
Diablo 2 is... I know my friends.
Finally, The Rock has come back to Diablo 2. Does that work? No?
Yeah.
Okay.
Diablo 2, just like your choices for us saying Alpha Centauri could have been in multiple of these categories, Diablo 2 was the most fun with friends. Diablo 2 is the game that got me into guild-style gaming. I was a major part of online gaming communities that were devoted to Diablo 2 and modifications to Diablo 2, and then I went and played other games with these people because I met them playing Diablo 2. Diablo 2's story is... probably not the best story. Final Fantasy X story is definitely better, but it is uniquely good in that it doesn't try to do too much. One of the things that Diablo 3, for example, has as a problem next generation or two generations from now, depending on where you're playing it, the game suffers from too much story. Diablo 2's story is just enough to hang the gameplay on and get you to move from place to place, and it tells it really, really well. Christopher Metzen's story is fantastic because it's a story of human corruption, and the gothic nature of Diablo hangs on that so wonderfully well. Obviously, the music, you talked about the music last generation, it's back, it's still good. I don't think it's necessarily the best, but it's clearly good. You could make an argument, as Paul did last generation, for Diablo being the best music. absolutely has incredibly memorable moments. For me personally, the most memorable moment of Diablo 2 was discovering it. I played Diablo 2 for the first time ever on Paul's PC.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, you had it installed on your computer and you were playing it. And I said, hey, Paul, that game looks pretty interesting. What is that? That's Diablo 2. Do you mind if I played it for a little while when you're finished with your turn? No, not at all. You can borrow my computer to play the game. Cool. And you went off and played something on the GameCube or probably Smash Brothers with some of our friends that were over. And I sat down and I started playing. And something like 4 hours later, you're like tapping me on the shoulder saying, Andrew, I need to write my program that's due for my class tomorrow. You need to get off my computer. Because it's been 4 hours. And I'm like, what? It's been what? It's been how long?
And that's why I failed my class, Mom and Dad. It was all Andrew's fault.
It's all my fault. And it sucked me in from that first place so much to the point that I didn't realize. Because I'm obviously, you know, I'll borrow your computer, sure, thank you so much. But if there's any, I'm not going to take forever on it because I need to get back to my stuff and I want to make sure you have access to your computer so you can do your work. I was so absorbed in it from the get-go that I lost track of everything around me. It sucked its claws in deep immediately, and that is truly amazing. That's why it's the best game. And then it got better. The Lord of Darkness expansion comes out, and this is a thing that Blizzard typically did. They would release the game, and then they release the expansion a couple months to a year later, and it changes everything. They're like, okay, we learned from feedback, and we've polished all the bugs, and we're going to expand things and make it better. And the expansion actually does make Diablo 2 substantially better. It refines the story and adds the next chapter. And it's like, well, where are you going to go from here? Oh, that's where. Cool. But even more so, the mechanics became deeper and more robust, and the characters all worked. And then, as I was saying, the mod community around Diablo 2 just allowed it to be the game that I played and engaged with for so many hours. On Paul's computer, only a handful, but I had to go get my own copy because I wasn't going to do that to Paul anymore. It Thank is you. The best game of the generation, one of the best games ever.
So it's probably the PC game I personally have played the most. I'm not a huge PC gamer, so take that with a grain of salt, but this is probably it.
Yeah, Diablo 2, yeah, it was a lot of fun. It's weird because I would say typically those types of games aren't necessarily my cup of tea, but yeah, I mean... It's got the Blizzard polish, and I certainly played it a ton. It's probably out of the holy trinity of Blizzard games, and there's probably not a holy trinity anymore because they've got Overwatch and all sorts of other things. But in my mind, it's Warcraft, Starcraft, and Diablo. I think it's the weakest of the three for me, but that's still an incredibly high bar, of which I played a lot of it. So didn't make my list at all this year, but I can't argue with if this is your cup of tea, then... This certainly should be at the top of the list. So you're not completely wrong, Andrew. Again.
Yeah, it's a very...
All right, Travis, what's your pick?
Very strong choice there. So I mentioned at the top that this was the first generation I owned every one of the consoles, at least the consoles that get included. So it kind of made it hard. On the one hand, I didn't have terribly huge a number of games for any one console, which I guess makes sense if you have to split your time. So this was kind of a hard choice because, yeah, you have games like Diablo 2 and Knights of the Little Republic and even Silent Hill 2 I could have maybe even put up here because of the memories I have of that game. But I went with one of the most controversial games of the generation.
That's like Postal or something?
No, God, no.
Armageddon?
No.
Oh, it's Grand Theft Auto, isn't it?
Which one? It's the one you can drink some
Jesus
hot...
Jesus Christ.
It's the one you can drink some hot coffee in. You can
Is
go
it
have
three?
Sex.
I thought of three. San Andreas.
Oh, that's not three?
That's not three.
Oh, really? Yeah, well, I
Grand
definitely
Theft, there's Grand Theft Auto...
modification
no.
for three?
No, there's
I don't know.
Three.
Honestly, I don't know.
There's three. Then there's Vice City, which is basically Scarface. And then there's San Andreas, where you're the black youth in California, unnamed town in California, San Andreas. But yeah, like, and, but no, the controversy was, yeah, the hot coffee where you can, there was some un, it wasn't,
they left a room.
Yeah. They left a room in the game where you could go have sex with your clothes on, or maybe the girl was naked. I don't know. But I was like, for a series that, yeah, included Grand Theft Auto 3, where you could hire a hooker, go to the alley, the car would move up and down. And then I can't remember if she left you money, I think, which it seems kind of backwards, but I was like, so, I don't know, the whole hot coffee thing was to me
My recollection nothing. On Grand Theft Auto 3 was that you went to the hookers to restore your health,
Maybe
they took the money from you. Yeah, but then you could beat them up and steal the money back.
Yeah, I'm sure you could do that. Or back up the car and run them over, or however you wanted to do it. You know, like it is what it is.
It's Grand Theft Auto.
It's Grand Theft Auto. But San Andreas like took everything from 3, more so 3. Vice City was kind of more focused on its 1980s Dayglow Miami recreation. But San Andreas opened it up to be like a real open world game, because you're no longer just confined to, you know, the gritty urban center like you were in the first 3 Grand Theft Autos. Vice City opened it up a little bit. San Andreas, you can go from one end to another, and I don't think there's any load times. I mean, it's hidden, right? They hid it in like long patches of empty road, and that was that was where they preloaded like the whole countryside. I mean, you can steal a plane and jump out of it with or without a parachute, your choice. I mean, just flipping through the radio is awesome in the game. Just driving, you can eat a whole bunch of food to make your character fat and then go to the gym and work all the weight off. Like, there's just, it's kind of a life simulator. And this was the era of, you know, The Sims was a big deal at this point too. So I'm sure they probably were taking some jabs maybe at that by including that type of feature. But yeah, and just, it's not as gonzo as something like some of the open world games in the next generation will be, but this was the one that I think kind of opened up open world games, at least particularly to me, like just how much you could do in this game.
Yeah, I had, I very much considered one of the Grand Theft Auto games for you, but then the immediate next question was the question you had for me, which one? And I realized I had no idea. I would have probably gone with 3 or San Andreas, but that could be just...
I think also mentioned them. None of the Grand Theft Auto games gripped me for their story, but this one probably had the most, especially in light of Black Lives Matter and everything now, has the most... endearing is not the right word either, but you know, like the previous Grand Theft Autos, like...
Enduring? You were all,
well, but like the previous Grand Theft Autos, you were pretty much like... You were already on the outskirts of being a gangster kind of anyway. Like, you were already kind of a bad guy. Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, it's been how many years since I played it now, so I'm probably going to get some of the details wrong, but I mean, you started off as like just a kid living in the ghetto or a teenager in the ghetto of some kind, and I forget what chain of events gets you off into the world. I mean, but it kind of tells the story of like anybody that was, you know, kind of listening to rap music probably at the time would have identified with, especially. I know that's stereotyping, but like, I mean, that's kind of what they did. They kind of took like those songs from like NWA and Public Enemy and things, which were obviously on the radio in the game, but they made it into a game, which again, I didn't play every game, but seemed kind of unique at that point from like everybody else being, you know, a white main character to all of a sudden having this black youth character is also kind of, in retrospect now, looks way more forward thinking, I guess, in light of inclusion and stuff like that. Now, some people might argue like they represented the wrong aspect of them, because yeah, I mean, you drive through your neighborhood and it's like completely gang ridden and all that stuff, and yeah, I mean, hot coffee was potentially a thing that they were going to put in the game, but still, there's crazier things you do in later games in other generations. But yeah, this was the one that stuck with me, and I probably put the most hours into this over any other game in this generation.
Yeah, I mean, considering that you can and often by necessity do have to like run over, like run through cop cars and run over cops and run away from the cops, and yeah, it seems a little odd that the hot coffee mod was like the big uproar of this is a bad game,
right? And like, especially.
You're stealing cars anytime you need to get around anywhere, right? Like, do you ever just, like, actually have your own car, or do you just steal a car?
No, you don't own your own. Well, actually, I don't know if you ever own your own car or if you can just, like, steal one and then, like, go put it in a garage so it's yours.
It's yours now.
Yeah, it's yours now. Hey, I painted it. It's mine now, right?
Yeah.
You got the license tag replaced.
Yeah, I don't know. I assume maybe you changed the license plate. None of the cars had license plates in those games. There's no law.
I seem to remember that was one of the things that you had to do at the paint shop, at least in Grand Theft Auto 1 or 2.
Grand Theft Auto 1, you would go through the paint shop, and yeah, then the cops would be like, oh, where'd he go? It's like,
so. Yeah, because the cops were stupid, right?
Yeah.
That's the part of the way that the game works. And they're stupid in Grand Theft Auto 3 and San Andreas as well, but yeah, it's a different kind of stupid, obviously.
Yeah, I can't remember if it's quite that bad that you can literally get your car painted in front of the cops and they'll be like, whoa? But, yeah, I mean, and I know Paul keeps saying I keep bringing up Switch, but, like, I'm playing through Breath of the Wild now. And you can feel, I mean, like, this is, you can draw a line from Breath of the Wild back all the way to this game.
Wait, what? What? Breath of the Wild to San Andreas?
In terms of being, like, open world, okay. go do whatever you want type of gameplay. Like, a true sandbox game. Because a lot of open world games are open world to a point. But I feel like this game, you could do whatever you wanted. Obviously still within the limits of whatever they programmed in the game. But anyway, I've talked enough about it. I don't know if either one of you even played the game, so I don't know how much you have to add.
I have not played Grand Theft Auto San Andreas. I've played some installments of Grand Theft Auto, but never a lot. I played Grand Theft Auto 1 or 2, I'm not sure which, for, you know, a couple of hours. And I said, yeah, that's a cool concept. It was a little bit of fun. I'm not going to come back to it. I played Grand Theft Auto 4 at Paul's request at one point, and I got a good way into the first disc, and then my wife asked me to stop playing, so I did. Well, she asked me to stop playing around her, which meant I had to stop playing.
Paul asked you to play Grand Theft Auto 4?
Because he really said the story was good, and so I was playing his copy.
Oh, I do recall you liked 4. You liked the Eastern European dude, right?
Well, I do recall having played Grand Theft Auto 4, and more than any of the Grand Theft Autos. Yeah, his name was Nico. I can tell you that. I don't
remember. We're going to go bowling.
Yes, and I don't really remember ever telling Andrew, like, this is a good game, you should play it, because I don't remember thinking it was a terribly good game, but...
Interesting. Well, my memories are different, and obviously one of us is incorrect, and it's probably me.
We'll find out next generation when we actually can cover it.
Regardless, I haven't played a lot of Grand Theft Autos, is the point. Before or after, and I've never played San Andreas at all, so...
I think it's possible I played San Andreas, but just because, Travis, you've hurt me so much with your... not having played Alpha Centauri and not having played Half-Life 2, I'm going to say that I've never played San Andreas, and I'm never planning on playing it, so take that.
You've burned every copy you've ever seen.
Yes. I've taken the CDs and broken them over my knee and burned them.
You poured hot coffee on all of them. That's what
yeah,
you
mean. That's right.
So
before, the only thing I want to say about San Andreas and the youth black character is the fact that the time that this was made, I wonder how many people of color were involved in the creation of this, involved in the writing of the story, the programming of the game, the development of any aspect of this game, or whether this was what a bunch of white people thought a young black man was going to be like living in that situation.
Yeah,
because they listen to rap music.
I almost cracked the joke of, like, I really hope the lead designer and lead programmer and voice actor were all black, or else this is cultural appropriation, right? But that's probably a good point. Like, it's probably not the case that this is a majority black programming and design crew.
Can't possibly, because there just weren't enough black programmers in the round to be working on this game in that way, because there's underrepresentation in programming. That doesn't mean that it's a bad game or shows it in a bad light. It just means that the people who are profiting from this aren't the people who are being represented, and that is interesting.
Yeah, and like I said, like, I mean, it's from my mind, not being in that demographic, like, yeah, it's basically if you took an NWA or Public Enemy album or a Snoop Dogg album, like, put it in, like, made it into a video game kind of thing. So yeah, that's totally a white guy talking about black culture at that point,
which confirms all your priors.
Which, to your point, like, nowadays, like, Ubisoft goes out of their way to say, like, every Assassin's Creed game is a multi-diverse, multicultural endeavor type of thing. So Andrew's maybe rolling his eyes at that. I can't tell. But
no, I'm agreeing with you, because that's what they do. This product is the result of a diverse group with many different faiths and creeds, and because they want to say that, but they also want to say that, I think, because it helps avoid criticism when they portray any particular thing in a bad light. You know, if you go through history,
like the Pope.
And Assassin's Creed, I mean, we're going to go assassinate the Pope in Assassin's Creed 2. Some Catholics may not be happy about that. Hey, we got any Catholics working on this? Oh, yeah, we do. Cool. We're good. We had Catholics helping us on this. And look, you know, you ask most Catholics, we're going to assassinate the Pope. Do you mind if we assassinate one of the Borgias? Go for it.
I wonder if they had pirates on the development of Assassin's Creed 4. All right. I think we're well into worthy of discourse, although we're getting out of this generation. One thing I wanted to go back and rewind was Paul, for since we've had notes that we should correct ourselves. The Video Games Live album that has Baba Yetu on it is Video Games Live Level 2. And I can tell you the reason why I didn't care about that song. That same album has The Legend of Zelda Suite, the Super Mario Piano Medley, the Super Mario's Medley, the Mega Man Montage, the StarCraft II, Final Fantasy Solo, Castlevania Rock, Final Fantasy VIII. And for you, it has the Mass Effect Suite at the end. So there were far more songs on that album I was looking for than a song from a game I had never played.
Yeah, that's a strong lineup, and Baba Yetu absolutely deserves to be included among them.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, I just didn't have an attachment to it. And the Dance Dance Revolution song I was thinking of is called Little Bitch.
Bust up.
So I just wanted to throw those two out. The rest of the songs on level 3 of Video Games Live, that's where song theme of Laura is. It has Tetris and then Chrono Cross. Other than that,
That's not nearly as strong as
not nearly as strong a lineup. So
it's got 3 songs.
It has others, but not games I necessarily think of their music.
Going from C tier to D tier.
Yeah. Well, that's why it's volume 3, not volume 2, right?
It's like Kids Bop, you know, season 57 or whatever. You're really skipping the bottom of the barrel.
So that was one of the games I didn't put it on Worthy of Discourse, but when I was Kids scrolling Bop? Through the... No. I said it wasn't one of the games I put. But when I was scrolling through the list of PlayStation 2 games, I had a SingStar. I did not know they had like 25 different SingStar games. Oh my goodness.
I mean, when you got something that works and you can just throw more music into it,
Once you bought the microphone, you might as well buy other games, right?
Sunk cost fallacy.
So I don't know who. I guess Paul usually starts us off with his worthy of discourse.
All right, I got 3 worthy of discourse. I already mentioned Heroes of Might and Magic 3. I just want to double up on that. Really, a fun 3? Game.
Why not 2? I mean, obviously it's not this generation, but...
Just pure happenstance, I think it's the one that I happen to play the most. I do remember starting with 2. I
played both 2 and 3, and I found 2 to be the superior game. So I'm curious what made 3 better for you.
I don't know if I can really say. I don't remember the big differences. I think 3 seemed like a evolution more than a revolution of 2. Like, it did most of what 2 did, but it added, I believe, some additional factions, additional relics, additional units, better graphics. I'll throw out there probably better music, too. I don't know what 2 would have going for it other than a sense of nostalgia, frankly. But the reason I picked 3 was mostly just that's the one I remember playing the most. What you tell me, why is 2 better than 3?
It's balanced.
Yeah, I will agree that I can't speak to the 2's balance much, but 3, it definitely felt like some of the factions were not as strong as others, and some of the units were basically never worth building, and other units were a little OP. So I can't necessarily disagree with that, but it still made it a fun game. So there's that. That's Heroes of Might and Magic 3. The second one I'll go with is F-E-A-R, Fear. I haven't played a lot of the horror games. I haven't played Silent Hill, haven't played Resident Evil. What other horror games are there? I don't know. But F-E-A-R, Fear, was one that I did play. And it was memorable for being dark, both literally and metaphorically. It has a very adult story with a twist to it, a very sad story to it, and pretty scary at the time. And I'm sure it'd probably hold up now. Very atmospheric. They really had a good sense of when to build a sense of dread and when to go with a jump scare, when to hit you with the, what did I just see out of my peripheral vision? Was that a shadow over there kind of thing? And when to maybe throw in a hallucination or two. It had a very interesting mixture of a scary and frightening, but also a very tragic and sympathetic villain who is trying to kill you and do all these terrible things, but has a very tragic backstory. So I thought that was worth mentioning.
I never finished it, but I loved what I played of that game.
Definitely
owes some debts to Japanese horror of the same time.
Yeah, I get the sense that it was not really revolutionary in any sense. It was, probably treading over some same ground.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to emulate something good, right?
Yeah. So there's that one. And the last one is maybe the one most worthy of discourse. And I'm going to say it's Deus Ex. I never know how to pronounce that.
Deus Ex is correct. And this is my second choice for you. If I wasn't going to put Alpha Centauri on the list for some strange reason, Deus Ex was the one that I thought you might have on the list.
It really hurt me not to put it on there. I really wanted to put it under Best Story, but it didn't quite reach the same heights as KOTOR. I was trying to find some music that was really good so I could put it for Best Music, but to be honest, as much as some people like the music, none of it was memorable to me at all. But it was a really great game, and I really loved the freedom you had to kind of do almost whatever you wanted. And it did have a very compelling and very intricate storyline, which I'll be honest, I can't really go over anymore because it was so complicated. But it involved the Illuminati and conspiracies. And what really sticks with me after all this, and an argument for maybe why it would fall under most memorable, so another game that could conceivably have fallen into a lot of these categories, is the ending, where you were given a choice between three decisions, all equally bad. One of them basically, I'm not going to spoil it, but three drastically different choices that are going to completely change the world. And it's incredible they actually made a sequel to this game, because every ending would change the world. It changed the world in an insane way that would make a sequel basically impossible. And it was a really hard decision to make, because they were all three, had some pros, but mostly a lot of cons to it. And that was what I remember about that game.
Some good choices in there. I'll throw out a couple more worthy of discourses from my list, unless you got something that you want to say, Travis.
I was just going to hop on it. Yet again, a game I didn't play, but this one hits like every checkbox that I should have played that game.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it... I don't know if the game would necessarily hold up. I've seen the graphics are kind of really ugly looking now. And I think maybe a lot of the things it did well has probably been surpassed and done better with later games. But I do think it was pretty revolutionary for its time. And it might be worthwhile trying it out for an hour to see if you'd like it. And if it's not working out, well, then it's probably aged too much.
All right, Andrew, now you can go.
Okay, so I'll throw out a couple here. I said that Diablo 2 was the game that introduced me to a group of gamers that I continued to game with for a long period of time afterwards. And once most of them moved on from Diablo 2, I still kept playing Diablo 2 because I wasn't hooked. But I continued to play with them, and the game that we moved to was Guild Wars. We continued to play Guild Wars, and that is certainly a game that is worthy of further discussion. It's a pretty cool, interesting concept of quasi-MMO. And you can't really talk about MMOs in this generation without also mentioning the big one, World of Warcraft. After the success of Warcraft 3 a few years later, they decided to drop out World of Warcraft, and it became World of Warcraft. So both of those are worthy of discourse at the very least. Another big series that gets its introduction here is the God of War series. Or if you want another series with great music, you gotta talk Halo. The Halo Combat Evolved begins on the Xbox, Halo 2 also on the original Xbox and PC in this generation. Good stuff if you like those kinds of games. And even if you don't, the music is really nice to listen to. Back to games that I actually played and enjoyed, though. Two more on the list. Paul, you're right. Kingdom Hearts is pretty awesome. I have not played it nearly enough, but it's a combination of Square Enix, crazy JRPG stuff, Final Fantasy characters show up, and Disney characters are right there. So you have Squall fighting with Mickey Mouse, and they're on the same team. It's kind of amazing. You can't really go wrong with that. And then, because it is so personal to us and our playtime, I do have to mention that we specifically did play a lot of NFL 2K5. The story there is particularly good because of the business side of it. I still am astounded by the fact that this game released at launch for $20 because they were trying to stick it to Madden. And EA has said, oh shit, we are going to get destroyed by this other game because, look, yeah, we're the better game. And many people still agreed that the EA had the better football game at that point. But we can't compete for much longer if it's that good and $40 cheaper. So the very next year, EA locked up an exclusive license with the NFL and destroyed the Sega 2K franchise and ESPN franchise of video games, for at least football, for the foreseeable future. And it's only been EA since then. This game was, therefore, the last hurrah of the 2K series of football games, and it was really, really good and just hugely memorable for me personally, for our games, our franchises, and those moments on Sundays when weird stuff happened and I said bad stuff. It was great.
There's too many men in my hole.
There's too many men in hole. My hole is the classic. Others that are a little more crass, I probably can't say on the podcast, but they're hilarious. Trust me. Not intentionally hilarious. That makes them funnier.
That was also the game that it was nice that I had a TV we could split in half and have real games on one half and playing this game on the other half.
Yeah. So absolutely, this one probably should have had more consideration for multiplayer. But honestly, it was only because of us specifically. I think that in general, the LEGO games were probably more fun with friends, broadly speaking.
I can't remember if it was this one or if it was perhaps a Madden game, because I don't know if I played this game too much at my parents' house. Probably not, because by 2K5, I guess it would have been moved out. So I guess I retract it, but it looked like a real football game. Like if you were just walking by, you could have mistaken it for an actual football game at points.
Yeah, if you're not looking too carefully, we would have it on. So the real game would be much smaller and the big game, the fake game would be blown up. And you look down the small game, you know, you can't tell. The camera angles look a lot alike and it's distorted enough because it's so small. They look like the same thing. Are you playing the same game twice? Well, no, one's real and one's fake.
And I think 2K5 still had all the ESPN trappings, I think, right?
Yes, it did. It had it had your crib and you got to, you know, bling it out. And
but I mean, the more you play, the more... The UI, like the game, while you're playing the game, it looked like an ESPN game. Like the cutaways were ESPN logos and all that type of stuff.
So. And the halftime show was hosted by Chris Berman.
Yep. Not real Chris Berman, obviously, but yeah. So, we already hit Bong. For me, we already hit Bongo. You mentioned God of War. I'll quickly mention Psychonauts was a very fun game. The main character was voiced by the same voice actor as Invader Zim, which was a show we were all into at that time as well. Apparently it's had a VR sequel of some kind, but never actually had a sequel, which is kind of a shame because it's a truly unique platforming game.
They're supposed to be making a new one now, and it should be out soonish. We'll see if it actually happens.
Yeah. I can't imagine it'll have the same magic for me just because...
It's been a long time.
It's been a long time, yeah. I do have to shout out Summoner and Dynasty Warriors 2 as the first two PlayStation 2 games I ever owned. I scrounged every bit I could out of a Musou and a very mediocre RPG. So I just have to put those out because they were what was available at that time.
Yes. Remembering Summoner. Oh.
Yeah, not a classic. Not a classic. But the true classic for me, like, I'm looking at the games and like this might be the game I poured the most amount of time into was Gran Turismo 3 A-Spec.
Wow, yeah.
I did literally everything you could do in that game, like got every license, got, I don't know, 5-star at every race or whatever the requirements were. The only thing I don't think I ever did was there was like I don't know if it was actually 24 hours, but it was something where one trick people would do would they'd rubber band the dual sticks together because it was on an oval track. And so they would rubber band it. They'd get a car that would like could withstand a bunch of damage or something because you'd still run into the wall and they would just rubber band their sticks together. That's the only track I don't think I ever actually finished, or I finished but never got first on or whatever. But yeah, everything I know about cars in real life, I learned from this game. I mean, I learned about like aerodynamics and drafting and gear ratios and weight differentials and
oil changes,
like wind. Like I credit like the few car accidents I've been in since having this game have not been as bad because of this game. Like when we described what happened to us to our insurance agent one time, he was like, I'm impressed you didn't flip your car. I'm like, I played a lot of Gran Turismo 3. It was a super realistic engine, especially for its time.
I completely forgot about it, but as soon as you mentioned it, I was like, oh yeah, I know, that should have been on my list. That was a better choice than American McGee's Alice. I'd remembered it, I would have been on there.
Yeah, and like, yeah, I subscribed to a car magazine because of this game, like that game, like, but I'm gushing over it like it should have been my personal best or something, but it is still just a racing game at the end of the day, you know, like, so San Andreas lets you race cars and shoot people and eat donuts, so you know.
And hire hookers.
and beat them up. And steal their donuts.
And the one last really quick one, because I mentioned that I forgot GameCube was in a generation, and then the only GameCube game I've mentioned is Wind Waker. I wanted to throw out Eternal Darkness, Sanity's Requiem, just as a, not a fantastic game, but like the moment in Metal Gear Solid that I mentioned last episode where like Psycho Mantis reads your memory card and goes, I see you like playing fill in the blank other Konami game that he read off your memory card. And everybody's like, oh, how did he know? Like Eternal Darkness pulls a trick on you at one point and whatever. It's not even a spoiler for the game and no one else is going to ever play this game. But like, I really thought my TV turned off. Like it emulated your TV turning off so well that I was like, what the hell? Like, and I looked at, like, the lights didn't go off. Like, the GameCube is still on. What's going on? And I forget what triggers it to come back. And I'm like, family show, but oh my God, you game. I guess we're not really a family show, but whatever.
I mean, yeah, at what point have we been a family show?
Fine, like, fuck you, game. Like,
there you go.
I think because, actually, I might have actually...
I can't stop fucking Priest Holmes. There you go.
There you go. I might have actually turned the GameCube off and then had to replay a section. And then the same damn thing happened. I was like, oh... fine, I guess this is part of the effing game at this point. Like so, but yeah, other
that's really well designed. I have not heard that story, and that's pretty cool.
That's it. One off event doesn't count for most memorable, but I certainly remember that part of that game. It was also a weird game for a Nintendo platform at that time. Nintendo has all sorts of games now, but at that point, they were still trying to be family friendly, just like our podcast.
Like we were until about 10 minutes ago.
Just like we were until 2 minutes ago. Little bitch. All right, let's...
Yeah, I mean...
All right, I think people can tell it's getting late. So
yeah.
That's my last game of discourse.
All right, well, I hope you all enjoyed listening. Let's see if I can get through this. I've been butchering it the past couple of times. So join the discourse on our website, rampantdiscourse.com. You can find us on Discord at discord.io/rampantdiscourse. We can check us out on Twitter at rampantdisc, D-I-S-C, or our Facebook page, facebook.com/rampantdiscourse. How'd I do, guys?
Three
thumbs up. Okay, good. And one of you is one arm, so that's fine. All right. Thanks for listening. I hope you'll come back to our next episode. And can't stop the discourse.